The Pax Romana is often thought of as a continuous time of peaceful and uncontroversial transitions of power. But as we've seen on this podcast, there is far more to the story than that. And today's topic is emblematic of the strange dissonance in the Pax Romana between superficial peace and its subtle undercurrents of intrigue and scandal. When Trajan died and his successor Hadrian took over, every effort was made to give the transition of power an appearance of planned and predicted certainty. But a deep dive into the source material reveals some inconsistencies and mysteries, and even a few murders. Let's talk about it on today's episode of the Pax Romana podcast. Episode 36, Plots at the Dawn of Hadrian's Reign. Thank you so much, folks, for listening to the podcast. Before we get too far along, I just want to ask a couple favors. First, would you consider rating and reviewing the podcast wherever you're listening to it right now? I'd really appreciate that. And then second, I hope you'll do a search for Pax Romana, The Plague That Shook the Roman World. That's my brand new book. It's out with Princeton University Press. You can buy it wherever books are available. It is about the world's first pandemic. This disease struck the Roman Empire at its very height under the reign of Marcus Aurelius, and the stories are incredible. I hope you'll take a look, but for now, let's get to the podcast. The Emperor Trajan extended the boundaries of the Roman Empire to their absolute maximum. No other Roman ruler would preside over such an expansive territory. And yet, as we saw last time, Trajan's vast conquests began to crumble even before the triumphant emperor could celebrate his victories. Revolts and insurrections swept across the Roman cities of the southern Mediterranean, eventually reaching up into the cities of the former Parthian Empire, the territory Trajan had only just recently won. All of that in episode 35. Things went from bad to worse, as we saw. Trajan contracted a severe illness and possibly suffered a stroke, and his death drew out over the summer of AD 177. But the dying Emperor Trajan, oddly, did not choose a successor, despite his obvious imminent death. Why? What gave him pause? In fact, it's possible that Trajan never picked a successor at all, and when he finally died, there was a brief but fierce power struggle, one which left several eminent senators dead. But whatever happened exactly remains a secret to this day, closely guarded most strictly by Trajan's wife, Pompeia Plotina, who seems to have had the final say in who took over the empire from her late husband. Plotina was an excellent match for Trajan. When they married, he was not yet emperor, and she was the daughter of wealthy elites in Spain. By all accounts, the marriage was a happy one, although it produced no children. Trajan's homosexual and pederastic proclivities were well known, and it's likely that the two had an understanding between them. Plotina, however, raised other children, most notably Trajan's orphaned cousin, Hadrian, who was still a boy when his parents died. Plotina seems to have raised Hadrian not with Trajan as much as with Trajan's Praetorian prefect, the captain of his bodyguard. This man's name was Publius Atianus. And rumors, of course, swirled that Plotina and Atianus were lovers. And I have to say, it's pretty easy to believe them. Well, the boy Hadrian spent his teenage years in Rome, learning philosophy, rhetoric, Greek literature from the finest tutors. And during these years, he developed a fondness for Greek culture, one that followed him his entire life and became really a central aspect of his identity. Hadrian was in his early 20s when Trajan became emperor. And although Trajan named no successor at that time, Hadrian was probably the closest to what we might call a son to Trajan. And Plotina, his wife, who loved Hadrian dearly, secured Hadrian's marriage to Trajan's grandniece, Vibia Sabina. In Hadrian's 20s, he would hold junior positions in Rome's civil government and in the military, but did not receive the treatment we might expect of an imperial heir. He was never named Prince of the Youth, for example, or Consul Designate, or any of these other titles that were usually associated with the future emperor. However, Hadrian, along with Plotina, often accompanied Trajan on campaign, and after Trajan conquered Dacia, Hadrian was given his first consulship and then his first governorship, and it was an important one. Hadrian was tasked with the province of Lower Pannonia. This is a province that bordered the Danube River. It needed a strong and competent governor to hold back the threat of incursions from the north. But Hadrian's thoughts often wandered to Greece, and especially to Athens, the capital of Hellenistic high culture. In his 30s, while Trajan was preparing his war against Parthia, Hadrian took up residence in Athens and threw himself into the life of the city. Hadrian, like Trajan, was also an unabashed homosexual and a practitioner of Greek pederasty. Hadrian spent much of his time in Greece with adolescent boys, but his wife Sabina, unlike Trajan's wife Plotina, was less tolerant of her husband's appetites. Some sources claim that their relationship was rife with hostility and bitterness. They also produced no children. At the same time, Sabina would go on to become the most celebrated woman in Roman history up to that point. Her image appeared constantly on coins and statues, and by all appearances, she was a woman of exceptional beauty, charm, and intelligence. But Hadrian was fully engaged with the Greek life, and his time and money were so entangled in Athens that he was given an official position in the city, as well as Athenian citizenship. But Hadrian was ripped away from Greece to aid Trajan when he fought his war against Parthia. Trajan offered Hadrian a military command, and he took it. And then when Trajan became ill in AD 117 and sailed back towards Rome, it was Hadrian who stuck behind in the east to supervise the struggling war effort. Back towards Rome with Trajan went his wife Plotina, as well as his Praetorian prefect Attianus. They were supposedly with him when he died in August of AD 117. The official story is this: on his deathbed, Trajan confirmed that Hadrian would be his successor. The story is very simple and tidy. There are no hints here of any kind of foul play or a conspiracy, and if we didn't have other sources, we really wouldn't expect that anything was amiss. But a well-placed source leaked an alternative story to the senator Cassius Dio, and we have that story. Cassius Dio's source claims that the succession was hardly as clean-cut as the official story suggests. Who is the source? We know who that is. It's Cassius Dio's own father, who served as governor of the province of Cilicia, the very place where Trajan died. This is not just any random rumor, and we have to take it seriously. Cassius Dio's father claimed the following: Plotina was not only a motherly figure to Hadrian, but she was head over heels in love with him. And when Trajan died, to her great disappointment, Trajan not only failed to name an heir, he of course did not leave the empire to Plotina's favorite, Hadrian. And so Trajan's death was kept a secret for several days, while Plotina, with her accomplice Attianus, concocted both the lie that Trajan adopted Hadrian, as well as a crucial piece of falsified evidence to support this conspiracy. It was a letter from Trajan to the Senate confirming his adoption of Hadrian. However, Cassius Dio tells us that this letter, despite purporting to be from Trajan, was signed in Plotina's hand. And then, in addition to this, there are several strange murders. The first was Trajan's personal servant, who died very suddenly the day after Hadrian learned that he was to be emperor. The tombstone of Trajan's servant still exists in Rome, and it records that the man's remains were transported there from the city where Trajan died. So he died right after Trajan died and in the exact same place. Did this servant learn some secret that was so dangerous that he had to be silent? We don't know anything more. And then there are the senators who were murdered. As soon as Hadrian was named emperor, the Praetorian prefect Atianus whooshed back to Rome. He claimed to have uncovered a conspiracy against the new emperor Hadrian, one that involved some of the most eminent members of the Senate, and coincidentally, some of the members of the Senate most likely to be named successors to Trajan. We might expect at this point that the proof of such a scandal be presented in an official trial. Treason trials were, as we saw back in episode 10, the standard way for such weighty accusations to be adjudicated in public. But strangely, none of the men were given a trial. They were simply hunted down and executed out of hand, like dynastic murders. Again, these were not nobodies. These were some of the most elite Romans, men who easily could have rivaled Hadrian for the position of emperor. One of the men, for example, had held more consulships than Hadrian, and he had served as governor of Trajan's prized province of Dacia. Several of the executed men had also spoken out publicly against Hadrian before he was emperor. Did one or more of these men declare themselves emperor, or perhaps have evidence that someone other than Hadrian had been Trajan's real choice? We don't have hard evidence, unfortunately. Just the outlines of a strange set of circumstances and an odd group of characters. But together, do they constitute evidence of some kind of criminal conspiracy? No one, for example, claims that Trajan was murdered. The open question is more about whether Hadrian's succession was legitimate, or alternatively, whether Hadrian was in fact the true heir, but that a group of influential senators tried to end his reign before it could really begin. Something was off. And I suppose what's lacking is a clear motive. Why would members of the Senate want to stop Hadrian from taking over? I mean, it could be as simple as they wanted the empire and thought that he was weak. But there may have been something more going on here. And as we'll see in the next episode, Hadrian would radically divert the course of Roman history. Trajan was an ambitious, outward-looking emperor, a man who wished to gobble up more territory to add to Rome's glory. But Hadrian was in many ways the opposite of this. He sought not to build an empire out of conquest, but to consolidate a commonwealth, one unified under Hellenistic culture. Rather than use Roman armies in expansive and expensive wars, Hadrian wished to put soldiers to work, fortifying the borders and building infrastructure. Many senators no doubt thought that Rome could continue expanding and conquering forever, an empire without end. Hadrian, however, brought a dose of reality, which some in the Senate may have interpreted as pessimism or even cowardice. Either way, Hadrian's visions for the empire would win out. If there was a conspiracy against him, it failed, and Hadrian was able to implement his plans, although for the rest of his life, the Senate would fight against him. And so now Rome's age of expansion, which began hundreds of years before in the misty history of the early days of the Republic, was now, in this age of Hadrian, officially over.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exocore. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.